Hello and welcome to episode 141 of Just Keep Writing,
a podcast for writers
by writers
to keep you writing.
I'm Marshall.
I'm Nick.
I'm Brent.
And I'm Will.
All right. This week, we are back again with our canon series, and I'm pretty excited about it, and I'm actually not going to lead this one. I'm going to hand it over to Brent here in just a second. Yes. But Nick, before we do that, we have been meaning to talk a little bit more about the newsletter and some other things going on, Discord and that kind of thing. So I'm going to turn it over to you to hype that up for a moment, and then we'll pop it over to Brent and get this bad boy started. I'm excited. I'm in the hot seat, and so is Will, if anybody wants to know. That's the spoiler for this episode. All right, go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, so we've got a monthly newsletter. So I'm running that, getting out as fast as I can at the beginning of each month. But what it is just keeping tabs on us and other writers in our community that have reached out, letting you know about the episodes that have recently come to pass, new episodes that haven't aired yet, and things like that. And it's just a good place to reach out to us to let us know about your successes so we can highlight you guys and everything like that. We're going to be doing some events and things like that in the future, so you'll know where we're going to be at. So if you ever want to catch us at somewhere, such as Brent maybe being at LavenderCon here in June, so you guys can catch us at different places and things like that.
Yes, I will be in LavenderCon in this. I was about to say December, in June, end of June. So, yeah, more to come as I know more. So I'll let y'all guys know. All right, so we're going to kick this off. We are doing our canon series. And so just for those who need a refresher or maybe they're just hopping in, they skipped the episode. When we say canon, we're talking about each other's personal canon. So we're going to talk about those works that kind of like are foundational to our writing and like why we even decided to be writers. So yeah, and it's just going to be, we're going to talk about four works from Marshall and Nick, and they're going to kind of like,
and Will.
I mean, Marshall and Will. Oh. Sorry. Apologies. Nick, I loved you so much. I wanted to hear you again.
I'll go again. It's fine.
Yeah. So Marshall and Will. All right. So, the first question I have out the gate is going to be, all right, so you choose the first work. And with this first work, I want you to tell me who you were as a person when you found this book and why this book was necessary for who you were in that moment.
So who do you want us to go? Who do you want to go first?
I will let you go first, Marshall. I feel like you're ready for it.
I'm ready because I got a visual for this. Okay, so who I was as a person. Okay, if you could imagine a very, very short, light-skinned black man in an all-Catholic, at a Catholic school, in middle school, I was sixth grade, I believe. So I had this buddy, and I was really into drawing and art and stuff like that, but like, I wasn't good at it. And what happened was I was looking for something to read. I was into books, but I didn't really own a lot of books. And my buddy was like, well, do you ever read fantasy? I was like, no, what do you got? So he gives me this book. This is actually the book, and people not benefiting from the video feed. This book, it's taped. The spine is taped up.
Yeah.
It is a Dragonlance novel called Dragons of Autumn Twilight. It is the Dragonlance Chronicles Volume 1, Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman. I am so happy I still have this book. I had it in my classroom today, and I knew this was happening. I was like, shoot, I got to make sure I bring that home, so I want to show the guys. So I've been carrying this around with me for ever. It was published, you know, in early 80s. But this was kind of the beginning of my fantasy journey. So who I was as a person was someone that was looking for a creative outlet, didn't have a lot of friends. I had this one good buddy, and he was into this, and I fell in love with this. I remember that Christmas asking for nothing but Dragonlance books. And if you can't see the shelf behind me, you guys, but down below on the bottom of this, it's full of these books, and I've been carrying them around for all this time. So I needed this at the time, one for an escape. I've said this on the show many times. At that point in my life, That was the tail end of the most bullied I'd ever been, and still continuing. And I just needed an escape. And this was it for me. It was high fantasy, found family. It kind of gave me ideas as far as like, and this was pre D&D. This is right before I discovered D&D. So, and this is obviously a D&D. These guys are heavily invested in Dungeons and Dragons. This is not new to anybody listening, but this is before I discovered it. So I'm like, oh my God, there's all these races and gods and all this cool stuff. And this is what I needed. And so I absolutely love this book. I still obviously carry it around. There's like whiteout on the front. I don't know if you guys can see that. I don't know why, but somebody,
oh my gosh,
somebody harasses me and put some whiteout on the front. I still have it. Anyway, I love this series. There'll be a link in the show notes to all of these, but, I don't know what I would do. I don't know what kind of writer I would be if I had never discovered this book, honestly. So I'm sure I have more things I could say about it, but I'm going to leave it there.
Yeah, no, I mean, and for those who can't see the video, the book is very well loved. You can tell that. Like, I think when you see those books with like the spine about the spine's been cracked and it's being mended, like you took it to a tailor, that just means it like was very... Yeah, very well loved. So,
we're gonna get some pictures to post it with this episode.
No, we should. And actually, because I was working next door, it was literally falling apart. And I was working next door to the library at the high school, and it was falling apart. And I just had the librarian kind of put it back together for me. And I've loaned it to students. I have loaned it to people, but it always comes back. So I love this book.
Yeah, nah, I could tell. I mean, when people see the visual, they'll understand.
I'll snap a couple of pictures. I'll send it to Nick. He'll put it.
I think people would appreciate that. I love seeing the world love the book. All right. Well, so you are up next. I will repeat the question. With this first work that you're going to talk about, who were you as a person when you found the work, and why did that person need it at that time?
I would probably say Six of Crows by Leigh Bardugo. I think, why did I need it at that time? That's a good question. I think because it's a story a lot about found family, and it deals with thieves, which as someone who was young and reckless, I can identify. But also I think there was a lot of commentary around when the book came out that like 16-year-olds don't do that or aren't that capable, and that it felt like they felt like they were overreaching their age. And I would always tell people, well, sure, if you grew up with two parents, you lived in a society where you were comfortable and you had adults looking after you, but for me, I felt like a lot of their thought process and the things that they were given their circumstances, yeah, a 16-year-old would act that way. You would grow up really quick. It wouldn't be that far-fetched to be that smart, be that resourceful, because you literally have no choice. So I think it was what I needed at the time, because it really helped me kind of deal with stuff that I went through as a kid. But also it's just like, it's a fun heist novel. And I think even just thinking like structure wise, like all the books that I've picked are books that I keep thinking about even now as a writer. And I think that is a sign to me that it's canon, that you keep thinking about that book, not just as a story wise, but also like craft wise. And I think, you know, with that book, it was a multi-point of view. It was a heist. It was about a found family. And there was a little bit of every type of character you could think of and the way they played off of each other. So just like how she also crafted that book and seeing the growth that she's done also from her original trilogy to this one is a really big thing.
Yeah. So that kind of actually leads perfectly into my next question. So So for the second work that you decided that is part of your personal canon, what do you think it did well on a craft level? Like, what still sticks with you? And have you tried to implement this sort of craft into your own work? And if you haven't, are you planning to?
Okay. So I would probably pick Dawn by Octavia Butler. This is literally a book I think of literally every single day. Every day. Because Dawn is part of the Lilith kind of trilogy that she had. And also reading about why Octavia Butler wrote it. So she wrote a short story. I think it's called either Bloodseed or Bloodchild.
I think it was I think there was both, wasn't there?
Well, there's series. Wild Seed, but there's one. Wild Seed is one of them, but Bloodchild. So a lot of people interpreted the short story Bloodchild as a story of about slavery because of the relationship with the aliens and the people. And she was like, absolutely not. That had more to deal with the male pregnancy and what it would be like for men to be pregnant. And then she had mentioned Dawn, that Dawn was really about, you know, slavery. Like, that's really what her thought process was going into it. But the reason I liked it was for, like, I think four main reasons. One, Lilith is a really engaging, thoughtful point of view of when she's writing. The next part is, you know, if anyone's ever read it, there's these aliens that basically come in and start to, Earth apparently had a nuclear fallout and humanity was on the brink, and they have three genders. And one of the third gender, I'm going to butcher the names because I totally forget, like the Ukulai, right? I think that's how you say it, is the third gender. And they basically work in between each of the other genders, right? That's the third gender. And Lilith has been genetically changed to be more adaptive, stronger. And that, to me, had a lot to feel about, like, how society likes to think about women's bodies, specifically Black women's bodies. And she put this in a sci-fi setting. Another thing was about actually what freaked me out too about this story is about the way that she visually described the aliens. I don't think it was something out of the normal, but the way that she set up the tension, like, I would have also been repulsed by them, right? As Lilith was at first, she was deeply repulsed by the way they looked. And then the fact that they programmed her and certain people in that society as they were waking up to not be able to stand human physical touch. And that she couldn't, as much as she wanted to have sex with one of the characters, she couldn't, like, they couldn't stand the touch. And this is where that third gender comes in and basically would attach their tentacles to each of them. And they would, like, make love in a very headspace type of way, like a very, like, you know, they were interconnecting with this other alien. And I found that to be deeply disturbing because it's like, again, someone is controlling the way that you procreate. They're controlling the way that you are operating as a human on a fundamental level. The other part was the other part of humanity who refused to partake in this new type of human race and this and being part of that third gender. Interacting with them, they were then sterile. They weren't able to have children. And they then ostracized Lilith because of the advantages that she had. And to me, this story was just so multi-level. I literally read it, and I know I read fast, but I read this in one sitting because I was that gripped with it, and it was so visceral. And do I think I'm covering topics in that my work? Not yet. I mean, Octavia Butler is a genius, so I think I will work for the rest of my life to even be as great as she is. And I think she just, that whole series is so haunting, and that even when she wrote it, even now, it's like, as a society, we're still struggling with these issues of who controls whose body. And you know what? Maybe I have touched upon it and unconsciously, like with the vessel. But
I was just going to say, you haven't, it's not, I mean, I was literally about to put that in the chat. The vessel is obviously this is influenced. Yeah. You. So, I mean,
yes. Yeah. Yeah. You're right. So maybe it's just more unconsciously. Like I didn't go into it thinking like, oh, Octavia did this. I'm going to try something like this. I think it just really hits home, you know, like people wanting to constantly control me. And I just can't do that. So yeah, it's my second book.
All right. So yeah. So Marshall. So I'll repeat the question just like before. So for your second book, what do you feel like it did exceptionally well on a craft level, and have you already kind of brought that that level of craft into your series or not series? Sorry, into your work. And if not, like, are you planning on doing so?
Well, and the fact that you said series, I'm going to go ahead and say that I'm no, but it makes sense because that's kind of where I was going to go with mine. I'm going to put the Dark Tower series on there, and by Stephen King. And I know, you know, most people know who Stephen King is. Obviously, he's got a huge influence on pop culture and movies and stuff. A lot of his stuff has been turned into that. But for me, and again, this is a little more visual for a podcast, but right at the top of my head for you guys, are just a ton of my old Stephen King books I finally got back from my parents. I used to be part of the Stephen King book club. I get a hardcover book from them every month, and not in read them all. I've read a lot of his stuff. But when I discovered the Dark Tower series, there was something about, I'd read enough of his stuff to realize what he was doing. When he got to the Dark Tower series on a craft level, he was basically making all of his work touch his other work. And all those worlds were colliding in a really masterful way. I don't understand. There's subtlety. There's overt, like, this is literally from this book. And it's in this series also, but like, honestly, one of my dreams, and this is something that I do in my head, when you don't have stuff published, it's like, I've got a bunch of stuff, but in the back of my head, I'm always thinking about how my worlds can kind of collide, kind of in the same way as like, you know, Brandon Sanderson has his Cosmere and all this other stuff. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I love the idea of interconnected worlds because what that does is it gives you the opportunity at any point to bring in all your other work and make it into something else. You know, if everything kind of influences something else and touches and kind of dabbles in the other worlds, whether it be sci-fi or fantasy. I mean, the cool thing about I loved about the Dark Tower, sometimes it was sci-fi, sometimes it was fantasy. Most times it was a Western. I mean, the Gunslinger was a straight up Western for most of it. And it was just, I don't know. I love that idea of like, I wrote this thing, but it also could be part of this world. And it kind of is. It's just the times are separate or something else is influencing it. And so I don't know, for me that series, when I got to the end of it, I was like, God damn, this guy managed to work in some obscure random works of his from like 20 something years before. And it's working, and he did it really well. So for me, on a craft level wise, I know it's not like a specific craft thing, but it's consciousness of all your work and making it flow together. And there was something kind of beautiful about how he did that with the Dark Tower series. So, I don't know. I think that's kind of what I want to say about that. I could go into the little, you know, there was a lot he was doing with that series, but and the first book isn't an easy read. Obviously, the Gunslinger is really, when he wrote that, I mean, you can look this up. He talks about it in On Writing and stuff. I mean, it's not, it's a really interesting read, but once you get, once you realize what he's doing and what it builds to, it's really well done. So, that's my second choice.
No, it's really good. I was thinking Cosmere, so I'm just glad you went ahead and said it, because I thought about it too. I was like, yeah, you know, that's interesting. Actually, I like that. I kind of try to do that sometimes with my stuff. There was a little thing in Necessary Chaos, and I know I don't think anyone caught it, and it was fine because I was doing it more for my pleasure than anything else. But yeah, so yeah, I love stuff like that.
It's almost, and sorry to interrupt, it's almost like a little reward too for your readers, like people that do these big sweeping epics like Sanderson or, you know, Stephen King or whatever. Like, even a subtle thing, if you're into it, you're going to pick up on it. You're like, oh, I see what he's doing. And you get excited. Yeah. And it's kind of like a little reward for your readers. I like that.
Well, and for me, like, as someone who grew up on comics, like, having those mm-hmm. little, like, continuity nods where, yep. like, someone references something that's not necessarily crucial to the story, but if you know, you're like, oh, yeah, that shit happened, like, 20 issues ago.
Yep.
And you kind of, like, you know, you get that little serotonin hit. So I think that's the power of serialized fiction, but also like fiction that builds on itself and, you know, exists in its, I guess, its own sort of universe.
But if you think about like even the MCU and like what they were trying to do visually for what you just said with comics, it's like, you know, if you've seen, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you're going to pick up on something in a movie randomly that was, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's nice to kind of give your audience or your readership just a little bit more, you know,
a little bit more. Yeah, I think that's why I love the craft sequence too, because now, like, mm-hmm. I mean, it always has done that, but now it's like, finally for me, I'm like, these next three books feel like my Infinity War. I'm like, mm-hmm. everything's coming together. You get that satisfied feeling. So yeah, I think that's a cool thing to aspire to with your work,
for sure.
All right, so we're gonna move on to the third book here, and in this third book, I'm going to ask this question that we've kind of asked previously, but with a bit of a twist. So is there something about this third book that keeps informing your work in terms of what you want to talk about, but also has it told you anything about what you don't want to tell in stories?
I'm first, right?
Yep.
This
one. See, I like these kind of questions because I feel like most people always get what do you like question and not so much of like what did it tell you not to like. And yeah. Like, what did it, you know? So I feel like I like these. I feel like it always make you think a little more.
So I have a couple things for this one, and this is going to bring back a conversation that we've had previously when Nick was on the hot seat. Will is probably going to either appreciate this or not appreciate it, but we'll see how the conversation goes. I would love to see what he thinks of this as well. But I'm going to just, and I really try not to include this because Nick included, but I can't leave it out, especially based on your question, Brent. So I'm going to throw in the Legend of Drizzt series. And a lot of it has to do with, well, what I'm trying to do with my work now is, keep that conversation about race and my experience being a Black man in this world in my work. Now, say what you will about the Legend of Drizzt series. Sure, he's a dark elf. Got it. He's a Black elf. And again, when I discovered this was later, much later actually, than the Dragonlance stuff. I was like, oh, this is a Black man in this fantasy world that I love. That's what I'm holding on to. But as far as what not to do, I want to do it with blatant intention. You know, like I get like with Drizzt, you know, he's a dark elf, he's a Black elf. There's this whole stigma around dark elves. We talked about this in the other episode. But, and I think Will mentioned something along these lines last time we spoke about this, but, you know, it doesn't really read as, it doesn't read the way that I hoped it would. I don't know if that makes any sense. Like,
no, that makes perfect sense. Yeah, like,
it's like you want it to be about racism, and it kind of is, but it's also, it's also really not.
It's not. It didn't go as far as you needed it to go, right? Like, and that's why I like the way. Honestly, I'm glad you said Dritz, because like the way I framed this question, I think an imperfect work is the perfect thing to bring up for this question, right? Because like, I think you can love a thing and love lots about it and be touched by it and recognize that there's some things in there I don't ever want to do, or I don't want to do. So
And before I go to Nick, I mean, you're right. It's like, I want, you know, I saw what he was trying to do, but he still, he's a white dude writing about these things, and I've met him. He's a really nice guy. I love his work. And I admire what he's done for D&D and everything else, Forgotten Realms. I mean, he's basically built that thing. But at the same time, I kind of wanted it to be more than like, everybody hates this race, so you also should, except for this one guy, or maybe these other two or three, you know? And it's like, but that's not how you deal with racism. And I think the excuse that we let it go by, and again, this is like what not to do, is like, well, it's a fantasy world, you know, everybody hates orcs, right? In Lord of the Rings, but like, there's never like really an orc story about, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. Anyway, Nick, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. So I think Will and I had some good offline conversations about this too. And I like that you brought it up, because like, there is an imperfect thing with the series. And I think for, you know, going back to me, right, that was like a very good, like, let's scratch the surface and start having a conversation.
Yeah.
And I was all in, right? But I think with like a series like this, like, you got to take the good with the bad with it and learn from it and realize, you know, these are the things I don't want to discuss about. This is the way I don't want to approach it. And I would say, you know, looking over time, How has the way he has tackled racism for you, Marshall, changed your views on how you want to handle it? You know, going back from when you first read it to now.
Well, and, you know, and as I read him now, because I still read the series, I really still enjoy it. I think it's not that. I read it for what it is. He's established a character. He can't do much else. He has gotten a little more nuance with some of the relationships for Drist and stuff like that. It does get more complex. I think he has grown as far as like, nobody likes the black elves. It's more than that now. But at the same time, I'm not really reading it for that angle anymore. I'm just reading it for, he writes amazing action scenes, and like, I just really love the characters in the world, and I'm, you know, a D&D guy. But going back to something that he does do really well, and I'm going to wrap this up with the end of the craft part that we had in the last segment, is that I realized reading those books a little bit more about like kind of redemption arcs and anti-heroes. And I think we talked about Artemis and Triri when Nick brought this up. Like, there's something to be said about how I started to write characters after reading these. Cause I'm like, you know what? There's more than just like good and evil. It's like, this guy was a jerk for these reasons and killed a lot of people because he had to for these reasons, but now he wants to do this and this works. You know what I mean? Like, it made relationships between like found family and characters more, you know, more complicated. Yeah. I am really eager to see what Will has to say about this, but he has said nothing. So Will,
I mean, I just think I think Bob's a nice person and I think he's a good writer.
How can you call him Bob?
That's what we call him. The reason, especially when Nick mentioned it, to me, it's just kind of laughable. Honestly, like, I get he was trying to like make an allegory for racism, but like, I think especially when it was written at that time, I think white people really think racism is like so simple. And that it's not baked into our laws, that it's not baked into our very ground of society. And the fact that he was the one dark elf that even he didn't like his own people really reminds me of sometimes, I'll be honest, the black men who would even want to date me, right? Like, I don't understand that. I don't understand that. Like, I don't think that's nuanced. I think it was a really simplistic version. I don't think there was any nuance in it whatsoever. But I also don't think, you know, like, I don't think he was trying to do that. I think he's trying to write something from his own experience because, you know, a lot of people have the intention of, well, of course I don't believe in racism. Of course I don't want that. But then you're not really understanding how structural it is in society. And when you create characters like that based on an analogy of what's going on in the real world, it just falls flat to me. And it fell flat to me. I just read it now. So it would still probably fall flat to me if I read it when it was, it came out in the 90s, you know, because I always said, like, with certain tropes that I would see, I'd be like, well, of course the gay person dies. Oh, well, of course there's only one black character. Of course there's only one strong woman. So, you know, I think that's what I think of that. I mean, I understand why it's so important to people. And, like, I think he's a great writer. I think Marshall's right. He writes really great action scenes. I just think it's a poor job to handle actually what racism is.
And as far as that goes too, as far as being a good writer, one of the other things he did really well that I have taken into my own work, and this will go into kind of the next part, depending on how Brent phrased the question. But one of the things I realized that I liked that he did was each chapter, and he was never attached to a number of POVs. It was like every chapter, it could be some random, Minzo Berenzon matron mad at somebody, and I get a chapter about that, you know what I mean? And it was just being able to bounce around in the whole world and not have to follow one person around made it kind of more freeing when I went to write my own stuff. It's like, well, I want to see what this guy's doing or what this guy, you know, and I, there was something about that that was intriguing to me as well. So on a craft level, he kind of opened up. And at the time I was reading it, and obviously I still read them, but I've been reading these a long, long time. I mean, at that time I was like, oh, I could do this. Oh, I have an idea. That's cool. You know, that kind of was, helped me out quite a bit. Nick or Will first, who's first? Nick's had his hand up for a bit.
Yeah, I think it was.
So I do want to say, make a comment as well, kind of for context here. We are reading this with an IP, right? D&D, Wizards of the Coast, there is a very structured way the world's built. So I totally hear what Will's saying. And I think the series and other books that they've done throughout are getting better. There are better series to read in the fantasy world that will tackle this. But I think in the confines of the IP too, like, I just want to bring that into the conversation. Remember, like, and we should probably do a whole episode on this too. You know, we are working with, you know, Bob is working inside an IP there. And I think for the limitations that he had, I like it. But again, I'm going back through my lens where, like, this allowed me to start having these conversations where for others, such as Will, who been experiencing it, who has lived it every day, this wasn't good enough. This wasn't anything to talk about racism. And I find that difference there fascinating.
And I almost didn't bring it up too, because it's two, I brought up two works in D&D, but it was part of my, you know, my whole thing. And then we're talking about personal canon, but this relic that I have in my hand literally still says TSR. That was what Wizards of the Coast was before, right? I mean, it's like this came out around the time Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. That was a second edition. So it's like, it's amazing, like, the evolution of these things. And you're right. When you're working in IP, that's a whole different structure. If you're writing a Star Wars novel, you got to write something believable in the Star Wars universe. Like, you have a little freedom, but you also got to be careful that you don't break the world, right?
Well, I guess for me, I guess what I think about, and I like with a lot of writing, I find like food analogies help a lot. Like, you know, just because like you were 9 years old and you had your first funnel cake, and that funnel cake really, really, really stuck with you, and you really always remember that first funnel cake, doesn't mean that first funnel cake was cooked good or nutritious or that it actually, you know, had value. But it is still important as a memory, because that was something that was special to you in that moment, right? Or I think about it this way too. Like, everyone has that pizza joint at like 4 a.m. when you stumble out the club and you go get the pizza, and it tastes fucking amazing at 4 in the morning when you're drunk and you're trying to find something to eat. Then you go to the same place when you're sober in the middle of the day. You're like, this is shit. Like, so I think sometimes that's how I like approach these things. Like, that book was my 4 a.m. pizza. It's awful when you actually look at it in the daylight. But that doesn't mean it wasn't good in that moment when I needed it, when I stumbled out that club at 4 a.m. drunk as shit. So,
going back to my story from earlier, like, you know, this book I've been reading off and on throughout the day, just as my students were working, because it's been on my desk. And I'm like, just randomly going to sections. I was like, it's third person omniscient. It's not awesome, but it's like, even the, you know what I mean? But like, there are moments, like I found there's a moment where one of the characters on the front of this dies, and I'm just like, that brought it back. You know, it brought back that 4 a.m. pizza, you know what I mean? And today not, you know, I'm not crying over it today, but you know, back then I was.
It evokes a memory. It evokes a feeling. And I think the reason I kind of ask that question that way too, is like, I think sometimes people need to understand, like, just because something evokes a good memory for you does not necessarily mean that the source of that memory is good, especially when we think about like, works, and like, it's okay to be like, you know, that work was important to me at that time for this reason, and be able to also reflect on it and be like, but it wasn't so great on this front. And that's why I wanted to ask, like, what about it do you not want to take from it? Because I think it's still important to recognize, like, yeah, this was important to me, and there were a lot of things that were great about it, but, you know, maybe I wouldn't want to carry these particular elements into my work. So we got one more book.
Well, we got Will's third book, though, still.
Right. Sorry, Will. Did I mean to skip your third book?
What was the question again? Tell me.
Yeah, sure, of course. All right, so the question was, for this, the third book that you have, what about it made, what did you love about story from it, and what, you know, what it made you want to carry into your own work? But also, what did you not love that you kind of decided, like, you know, I'm not going to write about this?
Okay, so I'm going to change one of my books then with this question, because I was debating between two. But for this question, I think it's the Anita Blake series by Laurel K. Hamilton. And I say that because I've been reading them since I was a kid, and there's so many things I love about these books, because they were kind of like an R-rated Buffy, and they even came out they came out almost the year that Buffy the Vampire Slayer the movie came out, but they're wildly different. The things that I love about the book is I love Anita. I still love Anita, even where she is now. Some of the critiques that Laurel has gotten has been with the amount of sex the books have turned into. And sometimes I think the things that I would remove from them are not the sex, but sometimes a lot of the emotional talking between characters, that I think you can do that in different ways. I think a lot of people who've made comments that the sex was too much, or I miss how it used to be, one, are afraid of sex and are not sex positive. I think it's also very hard for people to read women enjoying sex. What I really love about her, the character and the characters, is that they all grow. She's 30 books in, and those characters have grown each of those characters have grown. And the ones who haven't, it's an interesting commentary about that they're so stuck in their issues that their issues are working them more than they're working their issues. So that's one aspect of things that I really like about if you're doing a series that the characters really do change, you know. But at the same time, each book is like a mystery, right? They're really mystery books in a supernatural and kind of romance setting, right? The next thing I like in her books is the level of violence. Not once did she shy away from the level of violence. Even with the romantic overtones, and to find a female character to be violent is awesome to me. You know, the things that I would change is the representation of the police. I think it's really interesting to me that the police are like the good guys. And she does have some of the characters go through some dark moments, but there's none of this structural problems written about. And, you know, I think a lot of that is, you know, Laurel is a white woman living in St. Louis. I think it only has been recently in seeing her actually talk about and being educated enough to really kind of start to be like, oh, now I see what either like the Black community has said. And you start to see that come up and with the way she does the allegory with the vampires, and vampires are like out of the coffin and like they're having rights. and also we see polyamorous. She's in a polyamorous relationship. And the thing is about Laurel, and she's very open about this. She is in a polyamorous relationship. She has her husband, and then they have a boyfriend and girlfriend that live with them, you know? And I think what's interesting to me also is that, you know, the way that the queer characters in there, I don't think it's coming from a very cishead point of view. And even though Laurel herself now has a girlfriend, I don't think there's not this sense of a, in some ways, a queer community. It's just, it's different than I think I've seen other queer people write about it, because while she's bisexual, it doesn't have that nuance our generation has. And like under, I guess, because Laurel's in her like 50s, like late 50s. So those are things that I would change about it. And I don't think I would write first person. I mean, maybe I'll change my mind, but those books deeply affected me when I was really starting to want to write, because I love vampires and all of that, but the way she did it and the level of violence, I really enjoyed.
I'll yes. add on to that, actually, if you guys are okay with that. Yeah, go ahead,
jump in.
We'll turn me on to Laurel K. Hamilton, because I was deeply seeking an urban fantasy that blended really well with my traditional fantasy that I liked, and Will suggested this, and it, for me, I devoured the first three books in the same week, I think. So I haven't gotten that too far in the series, but you know, the way she does fighting scenes with female characters and the violence, like that was, it was beautifully done in comparison to how many other women I've read about in fantasy that were always the damsel in distress. So I really liked, you know, a learning point from there that I know Will does in his work too, is flipping that trope on its head and things like that.
Yeah. Well, I think too, I think that's really what affected me at the time, is because that was in 93 when her first book mm-hmm. came out. You didn't see that. You barely saw women have aggression or, you know, be the one killing the monsters. I don't think you really And you know what? Not that you didn't see it, but we didn't see it enough. And also, yeah. I think what's interesting is, you know, that character is half Mexican, you know, which Laurel herself is also half Mexican, but she doesn't, you know, she didn't have a relationship with her dad. So there's a lot of these things that I just really, I think, especially when it was written, and when it first came out that were just like, wow, I've never seen this.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't read any of them, but I have heard it's kind of like the pioneer for like a lot of these, the urban fantasy. It's kind of set a wave of urban fantasy after her, of like female centric, urban fantasy novels, and Buffy too, from, you know, what I've seen. So, okay. So our, question about our last book in our canon, Marshall, I'm going to have you start first. Okay. So, what specific work of yours wouldn't exist or would be completely different if you had never consumed this work? And I'm going to add a third bit to it. Or do you have any upcoming works that are directly inspired by this fourth book?
Is it me first or Will? I feel like it's Will first.
Maybe. It is Will first. I'm sorry. Yes. Will
no,
first.
It's okay. I'm really glad you phrased the question the way you did, though, because I've been waffling. I'm going to stay with what I got, but if it's Will's turn, I'm going to let him go.
Yeah, Will, for sure. Yes, you go first.
Wait, ask me the question again.
For sure, yes. All right, so what specific work of yours wouldn't exist or would be completely different if you had never consumed this work? Or do you have any works in progress or that you're planning on that are specifically, that specifically exists because of this work?
Yeah, the play that I'm working on is specifically influenced by this book that I love by Adam Silvera called History Is All You Left Me, which History Is All You Left Me is a young adult YA, I would say. It is not a romance book, but there is romance in it. It is about two characters, Theo and I want to say Griffin. And it's a story about grief. It's affecting me the way that I wanted to write the play. And it was the first time one of my friends told me I should read Adam. And he had two books out at the time. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to read History Is All You Left Me because it hits very close to home. And I wound up reading it, and then I really loved it. Again, I read it in one sitting, but it's definitely made me think about structure and how I want to write my play and dealing with grief. And, you know, it was the first time I ever saw, like, any queer character of Latin descent.
Yeah. Okay. So do you feel like writing this play now after having read this book, is it a cathartic process for you, or is it just like grueling? Cause I mean, we've definitely talked about writing being grueling sometimes. So,
I would say both. It's been both freeing and great, and then cathartic. And then other parts of it are really horrible. You know, because I'm putting a lot of my experience in there. And that can be, you know, where fiction begins and then where life is, you know. So it's been both. But I mean, I love that the story kind of gave me permission to write. Yeah, that is my biggest thing with Adam Silvera, is that I feel like his work has given me permission to write what I want to write.
I think that's such a core truth of like any fiction, like for the fiction that touches you. Like, I feel like, especially as writers, it gave you permission to feel something or do something or to believe you could create something. Cause I think Gabe talked about that with Fonda Lee in the Greenbone Saga, and how like he just felt like it gave him permission to write something that was just straight up Mexican and I give a fuck. And, you know, and so I think that I love that you said that, because I think that's the strength of the fiction that like sticks with us. It gives you the power to and the permission to create something that was in your heart. So, yeah, I love that. All right, Marshall, what you got for me?
So, look, I was waffling a little bit when I was putting this list together, and there's a bunch of stuff I could have put in here for this fourth slot. But what I was trying to think of, and I'm glad you asked the question the way you did, I was trying to think of what I looked at the works in a progression of where I am as a writer. I've kind of touched on it with the other ones, but this one, I wanted to try to find a work that was informing the reason that I decided when I went to Western to write a space opera. Why I decided to write I know I wanted to write a black space opera. I know I wanted to write something with black folks in it doing cool shit, as we've talked about. But why I've been writing fantasy for so long. And then I fell in love when my kids were younger. I fell in love with audiobooks because I couldn't read anymore because I'm putting children to bed. I'm washing dishes. I'm doing all this stuff. So I discovered audiobooks and I fell in love with those, that as a format and a way to consume fiction. And I came across John Scalzi, and I don't remember when, but the Old Man's War series, for me was kind of, it was a big sweeping, I think it's like, I don't know, six to eight books, somewhere in there. I looked at it earlier today. And I consumed them in a very quick amount of time, kind of like Will sitting down reading one book in one sitting. But for me, it was a couple things for me. One, I liked the way Scalzi wrote. I love the way he captured voice and POV. But also, kind of going back to what I was saying earlier, being able to tie in so many things over a sweeping narrative, you know? And for me, and say what you want about Scalzi, people love him or hate him. It is what it is. But like, I really fell in love with like, I needed some, let me say it this way. I needed something to spark my love of sci-fi again. And when I finally got to choose what I wanted to write as my thesis novel, I knew I wanted to write something sci-fi, not fantasy. I had dabbled in some fantasy earlier on in the program. And I'm like, you know what? I felt like I needed to write something sci-fi. That was where my mind was. I felt like I could deal with the race things I wanted to. I could be creative and I could play with what I thought kind of the future of our society was going to be. And looking back at my reading history, I was like, what kind of sparked that? And it was John Scalzi. It was this series. And then I basically have consumed everything he's written on Audible. I've listened to and very, very fast. And I just love it. Say what you will about it. This series is really cool. I just like the idea of like an old dude going to retire and getting put in a young person's body and leading military far away. It was just fucking badass. Just the idea of it and like the continued life, renewed life, and playing with what that looks like when you move through other spaces and come back home. And there was just so much there he was doing. And I really, really freaking love that series. So I feel like, to answer your question, without finding this series, this author, and this kind of sweeping sci-fi epic, I don't think I would have written the novel that I love, that I'm still working on, but that I end up writing for my master's. So,
yes, I knew I wanted to phrase it that way on purpose because I knew, like, I was like, okay, I have to make sure this question is inclusive of all possibilities. So I'm glad I did that.
Yeah, that was perfect.
So we're near the end and gotta wrap it up here. This has been a great discussion. But so final question, I think we've asked it with the other two episodes around this. Do any of you have any advice for listeners and early writers who want to try to do their own creative research or just kind of like understand what their canon is and what moves them? So I think Marsh, you go first. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go first. I don't know. For me, it was kind of like, shit, I've read more than I thought. And like it was helpful to kind of go back because I've been consuming audiobooks for so long to literally go through my library and see when I bought stuff and where I was at in my life at that time and like what I needed to be reading at that time. So, for me, this entire list goes back to your very first question is like, why this book and why this time? Who was I as a person? So I think that's my biggest advice is think of where you are as a person and where you are as a writer, and sync it up and see what's influencing you and see what you've picked up, like Will said earlier, unconsciously or subconsciously, you know, in your writing based off of what you've been reading. So yeah, that's my biggest advice, is just kind of go back to the archives of your life and your reading history and just be like, shit, I needed this and this is why. And oh, when I wrote this thing, and it was because of this. So to me, that's a big deal, is kind of syncing that up.
All right, well,
I would say to not think about what you've read, because
are you about to suggest the opposite of what I just said?
Yeah.
Just kidding, go ahead.
Like, I would say, like, what I did unconsciously, you know, of like channel things, let that be your guide. But also, I think what's important is if you're writing a book and you're really either like struggling with that first draft, or you're just struggling to find structure, is to literally sit down with a book that you loved and open that book up while you're writing and read it while you're writing and start mimicking that structure. It is a really good way to be inspired. And yes, it might feel like you're copying something, but what you're actually going to do, if you want to get that first draft out by doing that, by like reading that book that you love, that you want in your book, you're later on during that second and third draft are going to layer on so much stuff that you want to change because it's your story. That is a really good guide to like how to get a book done. Because you have to remember, we read those books because it's something we loved, and we are trying to write something that we love, but that is us.
Yeah, I think Cameron Hurley posted a quote about this one time. I can't remember exactly what it was, so I'm gonna paraphrase, but it was like the best artists know how to steal. And it's the truth. Like, you gotta know like what you love to be able to, you know, you have to be able to figure out the things that you love to be able to create something you love, I think. And I mean, I still do it to this day. I'll watch something, I'll read something, I'm like, that's a cool idea, I'm writing that down. Now, whether it actually makes it into a thing or not isn't really the point. I think it's the work of collecting it. It's the work of like remembering it. And you know, some of these things will percolate in your head and show up in places that you didn't think they would. Or like, I mean, we saw this episode, Will totally didn't think about Vessel when talking about, you know, who owns women's mm-hmm. bodies. So I think both what Marshall and Will said have value. You just gotta always say this too with advice, take the parts you need and then chuck the rest. So,
yeah.
And this has been Just Keep Writing, a podcast for writers, by writers, to keep you writing. You can find us at justkeepwriting.org. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Feel free to reach out to any of us on our social medias, and please jump in our Just Keep Writing Discord channel. Links to all of that is in the show notes. Lastly, please support our show by going to patreon.com/justkeepwriting. We offer daily writing prompts, early access to podcast episodes, and much more. Thanks for listening, and just keep writing.